Happy New Year. What's going on in your world?
Well, first I want to say welcome to Embark. It's Liz and Jack time. And I have a question for you. Nothing in particular is going on, although I probably had like a dozen of those chocolate-covered espresso beans, so batten down the hatches. But what do you do with your important papers? Where do you leave yours? Like when you have like
important
like
papers,
top secret documents, where do you leave
yours? Yeah, I keep them in my garage. But it's locked. Can you believe this is what we're talking about in the year 2023?
No.
We're talking about, yeah, but he had his papers here. Yeah, well, my guy had his papers there. And it's like, how about I clunk all of their heads together and we start over?
This is the best and the brightest. I just want to let you know.
Yeah.
According to sources.
The best and the brightest that, let's face it, nobody actually wanted, but this is who we have now. I'm hoping this will shine a light on, you know, the idiocracy that we're living in. Maybe we have enough time that people are just going to say, you know, let's start over with, you know, let's take a look at some other folks, some other leaders, some other people who are doing something.
And
everybody who's been involved recently, we're just going to sweep them and start over.
It's not even the third week of the new year, right? And it's
boy,
like
what a year this 3 weeks has been.
You know, it's a game of can you top this?
Right.
What's the next boneheaded thing somebody's going to
hold
do?
Hold my beer. I can totally top this. Yeah.
So that's what's going on. Let's kind of leave that in the background for a minute because we missed out on last week. And, you know, I can't go a week without talking to you.
Well, thank you. Me too. The holidays are over and now we're in the month of January, which I describe as the Monday of the year.
It truly is.
It's the Monday of the year.
And this is like the silly season of our existence, because it is cuckoo. And I have to say, I am not a fan of the Royals per se. You know, they're nice people. I loved their show, The Crown. And I'm not a royal follower, but I loved The Crown because I'm like, oh my God, they're just a really dysfunctional family. That was my takeaway. As it turns out, they are.
Right. I don't get it. I have never been a royal follower or someone who understands those who follow the royals. It's amazing to me how many Americans are just sucked in by everything royal. And this dates back, not even just the current stuff, but dating back to the 80s when, you know, we had royal fever here in the United States for a while.
Well, that wedding.
Yeah.
That dress, the coaches, it was Cinderella. It was Cinderella for every baby boom Gen X girl out there.
Yeah. Didn't we start a revolution to get away from that a couple hundred years ago? That's what I always thought. Like, why are we sucked back into this? The British always seem like they're so above it all and so smart and so intellectual until you realize, oh, they fall for this royal stuff and they're still following it. I find that whenever someone from the UK criticizes anything about America, I'm like, wait 1 second, say what you want about our president or whomever, but you people still have a royal family. Come on.
They still wear powdered wigs, which I just think is a fashion faux pas.
Right. And they still refer to them as a barrister, which I thought was the person at Starbucks, but I think I'm wrong about that.
But they make a mean latte.
You and I talk about Bill Maher a lot, someone who our Venn diagrams sort of mesh politically with Bill Maher. You know, Bill Maher had a great line a while back that he just can't, he's just not down with any system where a baby is born and another baby is born, and that baby has to refer to the first baby as Your Highness, right? Just totally do by luck of the draw who you were born to. He's like, that's where he's out. And I think I'm with him on that. But back to the current royal trouble, what do you make of all of this just absolute nonsense with Harry and Meghan and the rest of the gang?
I mean, Harry and Meghan, I think they're going to be without a country because everybody in Hollywood's like, y'all got to step back because you're a little too narcissistic even for us. You know, they're not going to the coronation.
Yeah. What is that like? Like, seriously, I'm imagining how many people their dad would be king and you're not invited to the party? Huh.
Right.
You know,
but this is why I love the not love, but so relate to the family drama of the royal family, because even if you took it from basic, you're one of three kids and you're number one son. That's pretty much your position for the rest of life, you know, and number two son's always trying harder.
Right.
The overachiever. And then there's like the third one, you know, when parents say, oh, yeah, we have millions of pictures of the first. And then there's a couple of the second. And then, oh, we had a third?
That's me in the pecking order, by the way. I'm the one that are like, yeah, we had that youngest one. Now, where is he? Did he leave for college yet? I think he did.
So in that way, totally relatable in that there's this pecking order in families. But then the overlay of I'm the Queen of England. But let's just say that because that just feels that feels really good right now, actually.
I'd vote for you if you could vote for Queen, sure.
My name is Elizabeth, so I do think that I'm ready for it.
Elizabeth the Third. Here we go.
They would kick me out. They'd be like, oh, are you here to wash the floors? Think of it. Not only is this person Queen now, you're her sister, like, say, Margaret. Like, Margaret couldn't get away with anything. It's like Margaret's like, nope, you can't marry that guy. Nope, nope, you can't do that. So she just becomes a raging alcoholic. I mean, most of this is unrequited love. That's a thing.
Yeah. But look at some of the other folks, you know, the Margarets of the world or Andrew, and he's got other issues.
Yeah.
But, you know, I always thought that sort of second or third in line, that's the really charmed life, because you get all of the fame, all of the glory, all of the riches, all of the everything, and no one really cares. You know, you don't have to do all of, but I guess you do still have to do some things. And that's where, you know, the prince and princess of West Hollywood or whatever their title is now. I guess that's what they chose. We're not going to do all of those things, and we're going to go to America and be like everybody else and, you know, be famous for, they'll be famous more than 15 minutes. I'll give them 20.
You know,
if that book sells well, right? Maybe that's the key indicator is, will that book sell? Are people taking to these docu-series and things? I'm so out of the loop with what people are watching on their streaming services. If it's not a podcast, I'm just not paying attention anymore.
Well, they're making a lot of money for Netflix. Not off of me, because I don't really brook in that type of programming. You know, the reality TV thing is not for me. I did see part of his interview with Anderson Cooper. And I think Anderson Cooper played it pretty close to the vest. I think he was trying not to have his eyes bulge out so much, because for a couple who claim they really didn't want the scrutiny of the press, the media, man, they're getting a lot of media attention and 20 million bucks to write the book.
Yeah. Well, we don't want the scrutiny. We don't want the publicity in the press, and we don't want everyone watching us. So where should we move to? How about Hollywood? Yeah, but we don't want the attention. I mean, they don't want the attention, but if they didn't have the attention, they'd freak out.
And so does this go along with a greater, I think, societal ill? You know, I have this thing about being emotionally slutty.
Yeah.
Do you have to tell everybody everything?
That's where we are.
Right?
Sure. Yeah. Have you spent any time at all on TikTok?
I try not to.
TikTok is an outsourced therapy session / money grab for people, typically young women. I don't want to sound sexist or ageist or anything, but it's a lot of young women who are posting whatever tragedy has befallen them this week about their spouse, significant other, pet, whatever, haircut, whatever, and just asking for people to show them love. I mean, that's what this entire social media platform is people wearing their emotions on their sleeve in hopes that other people will jump in and back them up either emotionally or financially. To me, that's what TikTok looks like. I mean, there's a lot of interesting and cool things on there, but so much of the content is just people pouring out their heart to their peers or to other people who will comment or, you know, like it or not like it, whatever. And I don't know if they're just looking for a dopamine feed or if they're really looking for solutions, but that's kind of where we are right now.
Well, if they're looking for a dopamine feed, there's this article in your favorite newspaper, the New York Times.
Oh, yes. I read it this morning.
You tore right through it.
Went right through it.
There's this piece on awe, finding awe in life, and how it gives
awe
you an
A-W-W, like awe?
No, like awe, like A-W-E, like...
Oh, awe.
Oh, like there's a sense of awe and wonder about the world. And it was just the type of thing I needed to see in the last couple of days, because it has to do with like looking at something that's bigger than yourself. Can you look at, like, say, a newborn baby? And I'm such a big baby myself. Like every time someone says, oh, they just had a child, like I cry every time. I'm like, it's such a miracle. So that sense of, or, oh, here's, even if you don't get to go to the Grand Canyon, if you're watching a documentary about the Grand Canyon, you see the grandeur of nature, or you see lions, or you just see fields of flowers, like that can be, that's bigger than me. That's,
yeah.
That's, I'm a piece of this.
Yeah. Even if you're not there, you can appreciate it. Sure.
I guess my point is just getting out of our own heads so we don't feel that need to have people love us or pity us for getting so public about certain things. And not that it's okay to share, but the oversharing is getting a little out of hand.
Yeah. I love that the oversharing is the real problem. Sharing isn't the problem, it's the oversharing, right? And maybe if people aren't getting enough of the response that they were hoping for, then they just share more, and then they share more. And then it turns into what I just described with TikTok and some of these other channels, that it's just this full-bore outlet of, here are all of my things, please like.
So how do we make it stop?
I don't think we do. I don't know. I think taking the technology out of the mix doesn't fix anything. I think it's just the way people are now. You know, we could shut off social media channels, and, you know, now we're just going to have a bunch of people who are strung out because they don't have their social media fix, right? I think it's getting people to do something very different other than just let's make a TikTok video for the sake of making a TikTok video. But we're rewarding people for that. So how do we get people to be involved in lots of other things? And I'm out of ideas. Bring back the draft. I don't know.
You don't even mean that.
I don't even mean that. Please send all of your complaints to Liz at Solar Media. No, I'm totally kidding about that. But I don't know. It seems like some sort of service for the greater good would be good for a lot of people out there. I wouldn't want to force everyone into it, but I don't know. A few years in the military would do some of these folks a world of good. Other service.
Or maybe we make them watch their own videos. We just put them in a room for, you know, 30 hours. You have to watch this. See what the rest of us
yourself.
Are going through. Let's go to something happy.
Okay.
Even happier. The NFL.
Oh, boy.
DeMar Hamlin. What a comeback.
Yeah. It was, I'm sorry he got injured or whatever his medical condition would be described as. What a time for us to all huddle together as one tribe.
Right?
For at least a week, right? We all, no one wanted to see that go any other way than what it did. So we all had a victory. So that was terrific. Sorry for his pain and suffering and condition, but
me too.
I'm glad he's doing better. Last I read anyway. It really did bring a lot of people together, and we all had one person we were rooting for at the same time. And that doesn't happen very often these days.
Hardly ever. No. And he's at home. He watched his team win their game the other night. So that's all good. You know, meanwhile, wah, 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 Tom Brady going out with a thud, unfortunately. I mean, he's played for my team. He played for the Patriots for most of his career.
Well, we've all stayed at a party a little too long. Right. I think that's how I would describe Tom Brady's career. Like, absolutely the greatest of all time. I will not take that away from him. I'm not a fan, but boy, I can appreciate how good he is. Maybe stayed 1 year too late. Well, going out at the end of last year, wow. What
could have saved his marriage.
Yeah, but you know what? If that's what it was going to take, I don't know.
Yeah, I know. There's
maybe that was not going to be saved anyway. But yeah, so I did hear a good joke today. You'll appreciate this.
Oh, please tell me.
Tom Brady walked into a bar to watch the Super Bowl. Thank you. Thank you very much.
I'm here all week. 2-drink minimum. To the point about football, and I told you I'd tell you this story because, you know, we're on competing tribes, but I was watching Laura Ingraham, one of my personal favorites.
I'm sure. Right.
And she was interviewing a local author who wrote a book about football and how corrosive it was. And his thesis is that if people just stop supporting football, it will go away. He's a football fan himself, but he sees how damaging it is, not just to physical bodies, but to, you know, people of color and how what a racist game it is. And I got to say, I know this will come as a surprise. I'm really not a fan of Laura Ingraham's, and she can be a real bully in her her style. She's a little abrasive. And she was asking him questions, and he had written a book about this. And he could not answer a question.
Mm.
And he kept saying it was racist. And she's like, well, tell me how.
Right.
And he's saying, you know, fans have to just abandon. She goes, they're having a good time. It's bringing people together. He could not make one cogent point about it. So I'm in an email group with a bunch of people, and they are like-minded, progressive, and one person said, you know, and so he ended the interview, or she ended the interview. He was talking about going to people's money, like if people just start withdrawing money, if sponsors leave. And he brings up, well, you know, when you were being so incendiary and people pulled money from your show. And she's like, OK, got to go. Bye bye. Because once you start attacking the host, you probably have lost the high ground anyway. Yeah. Right. Yeah. And so one person in the group said, well, he really showed her. He really shut that down. And, you know, he really made his points. And I said, I thought she was abrasive, but she really made her points. And he did not have any kind of argument for her. He did not have, he could not debate her on the issues. And then he kind of left with this feeble attempt to attack her. He's never going to win at that game. It's her show. And I thought, isn't that interesting? And this is something that we've talked about, how when we are part of a tribe or part of a group, our person is right, even when they're wrong.
Oh, yeah. That's the starting point. And you got to get to the point where someone does something really horrible before you finally say, all right, my guy's wrong. And yeah, it takes a while to get there. I'll give that guy, I did not see this particular interview. I will give this guy credit, and I don't know him, but it sounds like he's, you know, of a different thought than Laura Ingraham. I give him credit for going on that show.
Absolutely.
Because 100%. There's not enough of that in the media right now. It's all turned into echo chamber followed by echo chamber. And then you have to turn the channel to see the other echo chambers. Kudos to this guy for going into quote unquote enemy territory.
Yes.
And because, you know, the trouble with these echo chambers is you're not going to convince anybody, or you're not going to influence anybody who's not just there to be validated to begin with. So what's the point? You're not actually having a conversation, and no one's really there to be open-minded. I think the way you and I are, and at least sometimes being open to the idea of changing an opinion. Most people don't want to go there. I'll give you a similar story from my side. There was quite a heated exchange on Meet the Press this weekend with Senator Ron Johnson from Wisconsin and Meet the Press host Chuck Todd. And Chuck Todd, who I think is a complete lunatic. He's just he's not a journalist, right? Like in the history of that show, there have been many great journalists, mostly liberal, but they were still journalists who hosted that show and brought in all kinds of people. Tim Russert, I think, is probably the greatest TV host in the history of TV. But now we've got Chuck Todd, who's just, you know, He's just an advocate. And he started getting in an argument with the senator from Wisconsin. And it's like, okay, that's a little weird that you're taking that path. And they really got into it. It was heated. Ooh. Right. Go check it out on YouTube, everybody.
Oh, I will.
It's popcorn viewing. And I will say this, some of the conservative folks out there on social media afterwards, their take on it was that sucked. But you know what? Why is Ron Johnson even going on Meet the Press? It's a waste of time. It's nothing but you're going to be attacked by Chuck Todd and you shouldn't have even gone on. And it serves you right. And don't even bother going on these you know, far left political shows. And I'm kind of back to what you were saying about the guy who was on Laura Ingraham's show. Like, no, you should go on Absolutely. The shows that are hosted by someone with an opposing view. Hopefully you could have a little bit more of a civil conversation. Why go on all of these shows where everyone believes the same thing anyway? You're not sharing. If you really have something interesting to share, you got to go out to the people who aren't already on board. And we see that time and time again. You know, the Trump people all showed up on Fox for 4 years. And the Biden people now never go on Fox. They only go on CNN and NBC. You know, if you're actually an official, whether you're a senator or you work for the administration or something, sometimes you got to, you know, put the chin strap on and go into an interview with someone who isn't going to ask you what your favorite kind of ice cream is. I kind of see the same thing there. It's like, hey, good for Ron Johnson. I don't agree with everything he says. I don't agree with anybody, but good for him for going on that show. And I hope more, especially of our elected politicians, I hope more of them do go on more shows that are maybe not the friendliest.
And going back to this interview with Laura Ingraham, I think he was overwhelmed. There were no kid gloves there. And, you know, and he's a writer. He's a pretty, like, decent dude. And so it was, I think it was like the lion, you know, the guy stepping into the lion's cage or, like, get me out of here now. Who booked this? So
call my agent, fire my agent. Yeah.
And of course, we feel for these people, but it's what we on the outside do with that once we see it and being able to at least say, well, yeah, she's a jerk or he's a jerk. But you know what? They have a point. What is it? A broken clock is correct twice a day.
Yeah.
We have to give people a teeny bit of benefit of the doubt with that stuff. So,
yeah, I don't even mind a host of a show being, you know, far to the left or far to the right and being hard on the guest. You know, back to the case with Senator Johnson. If he can't handle a debate with a guy from a Sunday morning show, then how is he going to handle a debate with the president of the United States or the secretary of state or whomever, right? So I think it's okay for these folks to, you know, really mix it up once in a while and get into a vigorous debate. So the ones who don't want to do that, those are the people I worry about. The people who only go on, you know, the shows that their tribe is watching because there's no hard questions. They never have to mix it up. And I think it makes them kind of soft. You don't get that that privilege of only getting softball questions once you sit down at the bargaining table with Russia, China, whomever the real adversary is right now. So I don't know. I don't see a lot of that happening right now. There's not a lot of actual civil debate happening in the media, except for on this show.
Well, always in good taste. So, Jack, given what happened, you know, with the House of Representatives 10 days ago, when people go, okay, we'll barely tolerate you for now, so you can have a job, and everything else that's going on, how confident are you on a scale of 1 to 5 that anything's going to be accomplished between now and 2024?
Well, I'm always an optimist in that our government was set up to be exactly like what it is. The founding fathers, they didn't set this up so one side always ruled everything, executive, judicial, and legislative branch. They set it up so it would be mixed. And that's the whole checks and balances. So I think the most dangerous thing, and where actually nothing really gets done, is when you do have one side that has, you know, the House, the Senate, and the White House, you would think they would get a lot done. But look back at the history. With the exception of a few big bills, there's so much that everybody thought Obama was going to get done when he had the entire U.S. Congress. And there was so much that people thought Bush was going to get done when he had the whole Congress to himself, too. And they typically squander those opportunities, right? You don't build any muscle mass when there's no resistance. And I think that resistance makes you better. I've always said, you know, the best thing that happened to George W. Bush's domestic policy was Teddy Kennedy,
mm-hmm.
right? They actually worked together on a bunch of things that all kind of got, you know, left behind because, no pun intended, because of 9/11. But there were some things that they were working on at the time. And you and I have talked about Reagan and Tip O'Neill back in the 80s. And I think having that competitor actually makes you better. You have to make deals. You have to get down into it and not always get what you want, but get some of what you want. If you have a clean slate and you get to just run the table, you end up squandering it, and nothing actually good comes from that either. So I'm overly optimistic, but I think it's good that we've got a bit of a divide right now. That's the way it was set up to be. And now these guys got to go to work. Now they have to make a deal. They can't just put out, you know, 17 executive orders. Now they actually have to sit down and talk. So
I totally agree with you. And I believe that you need two parties. Maybe you need more than mm-hmm. two parties.
Yeah, but three would be better, right?
Right. You need to have a balance and a counterbalance all the time, and that can change. That can shift.
Mm-hmm.
How much can the GOP get done when there's so much infighting, so many divisions, and so many people who, I mean, even the mainstream Republicans have got their hands up. It's like, we give up. We don't know what to do anymore. That's the piece that I worry about. I mean, let's different philosophies, different political views. I'm all about it. We can have that conversation. Can we have a conversation when people are making, spoiler alert, backroom deals are made all the time. But these seem to be a bridge too far.
Yeah, I don't think anyone's expecting, you know, the greatest turnaround in the history of governments in the next 18 months. We've got an election coming, right? That's all that matters to these guys is the 2024 election. You have half of the people on both sides are lining up on who they're going to support, right? And to stick your neck out with any interesting legislation on either side, that's just not going to happen. I think what the Republicans could accomplish at the very most is shining a light on some economic stuff. You know, that's where they should spend their time. Are they going to do what they should do? Probably not, but that's where they could spend their time. A lot of them too, think about this. The 2024 presidential election is big. You know, it's bigger. The 2024 Senate elections. There are a lot of senators up. There are a lot of senators retiring. And that map is going to look really different after 2024. While we're all watching the presidential race, there's this Senate race in many states that's going to be really, really interesting.
And I will say that the Democrats are often weak on doing the local races, getting into the community, and mm-hmm. going state by state. So it'll be interesting to see what the blue team does and what the red team does. And will there be any cross-pollination, as we saw in the midterms? There were people who were like, I'm going to split the difference here.
I'm going to vote for a red senator and a blue governor or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. So exciting things. Well, this has been another lovely chat. I'm going to go and shine my tiara because I do have aspirations.
Yes, Queen Elizabeth III.
We're just getting silly. We should do this again soon.
Okay, you name the topic and I'll be here.
All right, well, wait a minute. Let me just ask you, anything that you would like to talk about next that I should keep in the back of my head?
Oh, boy, what could we talk about next? I would like to talk at some point about and it changes every week. So I don't know when we're going to talk about this. I'm fascinated by what's going on with Twitter. I'm fascinated. We talked a lot about TikTok today, but I see a return to Twitter. It's getting really interesting over there, or the whole thing could blow up in a bad way. Who knows? But that's where the free speech argument is happening right now. You know, it used to be the free speech argument used to be happening at newspapers. Now it's happening on Twitter and maybe some other social channels. So that's something we could maybe dive into deeper at some point, too.
I would love that. I mean, Twitter, love it, hate it. I don't particularly think it's the free speech place. I think it's the place where people talking about free speech. I'm not sure that that's actually yeah. happening, but, you know, it's worth having the talk. Well, my friend, another one in the can.
Cheers. Thank you.
Where it belongs.
All right. Have a good day, Queen.
If you enjoy hanging out with Jack Monson and I, please share this episode, tell a friend about it, and please subscribe. If you have any questions, comments, ideas you'd like to share with me, liz@embarkthepodcast.com. We know you have a lot going on in your life and precious little time, so I want to thank you for spending a half hour of it with us. Have a great week, and see you next time.